Welcome, everybody, this afternoon to, I guess, morning-ish, afternoon-ish session. How's everyone doing? Good? How was the morning keynotes? Good? The last one was really good, I heard. I heard it was. I wasn't there. I don't know. So welcome back. You just heard me talk for an hour, and now you're back to hear me talk for another hour, or 45 minutes. So, hopefully at the end we'll have a little bit of time for some questions, and for those who did come to my session, I do have little stickers as well that say my other computer is an Azure data center. So I'll give these out after the session. So today, this session, I'm going to be focusing on building apps in Azure using Windows and Linux VMs. I am focusing on VMs in this particular session. And then I have a later session today focusing more on the full application model. I'll show more on app service at that point. So as I mentioned this morning, I am the director of compute in Azure. So I'm responsible for the entire compute platform in the Azure team. And I'm excited to be here. It's been a lot of fun. And so let me get rolling. So the start of this session, the start of this conversation, is really around the fact that the cloud is dramatically changing expectations. It's changing the way people view and work with compute. It's changing the way people expect their applications to work and run. And it's changing the way people want to develop their applications and how they want to develop their applications. And this is where I do think some of the services that we're offering and technologies that I'll walk through even today really enable a lot of those changes in approach and expectation. So the three big areas in this sort of change, which I talked a little bit about this morning. Hyperscale, the expectation that applications continue to grow. They get bigger and bigger and bigger. They scale out, they scale up. The need to be able to take additional load and capacity is constantly on everyone's mind. Because everyone, when they start something, of course you expect it's going to grow. You probably shouldn't be working on something if you don't think it's going to get bigger. And so the need to be able to handle that, the need to be able to react to that type of scale, very, very important. Availability, the ability to have always on uptime, 24/7. It's a new expectation that's really happened over the last few years. For those of you who do online banking, your expectation is your bank is always available. Your bank is always online. It's always there. You can't have downtime. And this is just a new expectation. I remember in the early days of the internet, banks used to all the time have weekends off. Oh, we're down for the weekend. It's just unacceptable now. And so this high availability expectation has really run rampant across all of applications and customer expectations. And then agility. To compete in this new world, to compete against small, large companies, to be able to really have an impact with your application, you need to move fast. You need to be able to change quickly. And this can be the full range of line of business apps that you're running internally, where your customers are doing their payroll. Their expectation is going to be that it's very easy and very fast and very simple. Or it could be your external facing website or your external facing service. The expectation is you're going to improve constantly. The under construction banner on websites doesn't exist anymore, right? The expectation is you're updating. It's always there, it's always available, and it's always getting updated with changes and fixes. And how then can we enable those types of solutions across all three of these with Azure? So first, hyperscale. So this runs a few different ways. The first is, of course, just being able to scale across a set of virtual machines. And I talked about it a little bit this morning. I'll actually be demoing scale sets today. The ability to have that quick scale out, that automated, automatic scale out capability, very, very important when you're looking at a hyperscale requirement. The other thing that I showed a little bit this morning is container scale. The ability to have many, 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 many containers. See how many I have in this picture. It's a good example. You need 20, 30, 40 containers to be able to deploy quickly on virtual machines, scale back, scale up. Having that container scale, very critical. And then, of course, that global scale. That 30 region count, being able to reach your customers as close as possible, being able to have the opportunity to grow more broadly and much larger than perhaps you're deploying today. And that global scale is very, very important for a lot of applications. From an availability perspective, I'll show you today how you can deploy virtual machines in a highly available way. So whether it's physical availability, this across machines or across racks or power switches, how can you take away those concerns that you have today with an on-premise or back-end data deployment in your existing data center? How can you make that all go away? And the primary solutions we have enable this to be automated. You'll say deploy 3 VMs, and we'll make sure that they're deployed across these multiple racks, this multiple power, and this multiple network. And then broad network availability. How do you get public IP availability so that you can span across a bunch of instances when you deploy VMs? How can you get global availability so you can deploy in West and East and make sure that if any one goes down or any network problem happens, you can be able to have uptime of your application? And this is both single VMs. It can also be a range of scale-out VMs as well. And then, of course, how do you get that global availability? How do you make sure that West and East can have that network availability across the world? Finally, agility. One of the big aspects of agility is, of course, agile development. In this case, spinning up and deleting and spinning up and deleting. Being able to start quickly and learn and restart as you learn. Very, very important. It's something that the best innovators in the cloud, the best companies who are building solutions right now, the ones who are really changing the way their enterprises work, it's all based on this ability to be agile, to be fast, to change quickly. One of the very exciting aspects of Azure is our ability to have repeatable and pre-built environments. And I'll show this as well. Being able to have full templates of large applications and be able to deploy them in a very, very easy way. And then, of course, the agile sizing, which I mentioned this morning. Having different sizes and different choices so you can make sure you're paying exactly what you need for exactly what you're doing. You can scale from the D to the DV2, the new generation of D, to the large G, and, of course, the GPU SKUs coming out soon. Okay. So let me actually dig in a little bit further on hyperscale. So hyperscale, when you're deploying virtual machines today, if you're just deploying a virtual machine, if you're deploying on-premises, maybe you've got a three-tier application, you're deploying in Azure, you can do the exact same thing you do on-premises. Take that app, let's say SQL, IIS front-end, or you know Oracle with, let's say, an Nginx front-end or Apache front-end. You can take those exact same workloads and you can move them into virtual machines. And I draw this picture because when you deploy this way as a virtual machine, we typically call these pets, right? You name them, right? You know them. The virtual machines you're running on premises, you know them, right? If they get sick, you bring them back to life. You have to go log in and fix them and so on. So again, pets, you care about them, right? And all the different components are all brought together as part of that. And then you want to scale out. Well, it's a completely distinct one, right? You've got two running SQL Server. It's a completely separate VM that's running. And that will scale out for you, and that's basically handling. So I've got mine, and then I've also built one that's Mark VM, again, naming it. If it dies, I bring it back to life, and so on. So very, very important that you end up treating these like pets. And so these are VMs, and this is sort of the lift and shift approach to being able to deploy applications. If you're doing this exactly the way you do it on-prem, this ends up being the model. Now, we've recently released what's called VM scale sets. And what's different about VM scale sets is it takes this idea of a virtual machine, but it makes it into a stamped out copy. So here, you've got six of these, let's say. You end up making a copy, and you stamp them out. And so here you number them, let's say. So you say, I want 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. You don't name them anymore. They're not your pets, right? If one gets sick, you kill it. And you wouldn't do that ever with a pet. We actually call these cattle for that reason, actually. So you end up killing it, you get a new one, right? And so the benefit of this is you can scale up and down. You basically ignore each individual one. You install the software. Everything is automated. It's a different approach. And you can do both in Azure. And so this fully automated system is available for you to go deploy and manage accordingly. And we have folks, lots of folks using scale sets today. So obviously lots of folks using VMs, but from ScaleSet's perspective, folks doing massive deployment, large compute computations, TalkTalk, our container service runs on ScaleSets. We have big computing on ScaleSets, so a lot of different usages there to be able to deploy. So let me actually show you a little bit of a demo of this. And so let's zoom over. Looks like the little switcher's not here. Well, let's do old school, huh? Let's just take the plug and jam it over here. All right. This one I am going to show you on my Mac here. And so what I've done here is I've actually got a set of scale sets. I've got a scale set running right now. And so it's actually running. I've got a single one running. And so let me actually show you what this looks like here in the portal. And so here is, let's see, can you see that? Let me zoom in. So here's a scale set running. It's a resource group, so let me zoom in and take a look at what the actual scale set looks like. Okay? And so here I've got capacity one, okay? And so this is running right now. It's called AutoCori. And so it's a single one that's running. And if I actually zoom in and take a look at what's configured here, I can go in and check the properties of this. But what I'm going to do is go back here and see. I've got a load balancer already set up on this, and so I've got a load balancer that's set up, and it's pooling on this. So as this scales out, the load balancer will automatically detect that it needs to scale out, and it will add additional capacity accordingly. And so what happens is I've got one, it's running, it will automatically connect the load balancer in whatever configurations that I've set. And so here I've got just a single one running, and so if I look at the load balancing rules here, it's got a single load balancing rule on port 80. Okay, and so that is actually this interface right here. I'm running here. It also has different NAT rules that are set. And so here you can see I've got a NAT rule set on 9001, and I've got these ports. And so what's going to happen here is as this scales out, as I increase the count of virtual machines running here, the system figures it out. The system's built to be able to respond to that type of change, automatically add the NAT rules, automatically do the load balancing, and the system just works. So let me actually show you. And so I've kicked off some work on this, and it does take a little bit of time to spin up the work here. But let me actually show you here. And so this is actually running here in the Azure Resource Explorer. This is the actual instances running. And so you can see here on the left, I've got my application resource group. There's AutoCori here, right? And so I can go in. I'm going to actually pull up the compute scale set look here, and if I pull this up and go into, so here you can see some interesting things. Let me zoom in here. So first of all, my VMs that are going to scale here, they are running on a set of 5 storage accounts. So the other thing we'll do is we will automatically distribute the storage that you're using across those 5. So none of them get overloaded or none of them get too busy. And so this enables that automatic scaling to happen. And here you can also see are the automatic network rules. And so here are the networking rules for the load balancer, the networking rules for the NAT. And so this goes to the underlying instances and, again, automatically adds these as the system scales. And you can even connect with auto-scaling to be able to automatically respond to that scaling and be able to grow to multiple instances. So here you can see I've got an auto-scale rule, and it's going to be after 5 minutes if the threshold on the CPU is averaged, I'm looking at the scale down one, averages above 50, then I will automatically scale up. And this will add instances, and it will let me know that it's added instances. And as that continues to happen, then if it slows down, it will scale back down over time. And so let's see here. So I do have work that I've kicked up here. And so what we'll probably do is we'll give that some time to spin up and catch up, and then maybe we'll come back here and show this off as we get that work going. So that's the scale set. Let's take a look here. And we'll keep our eyes on this. Okay, so that's the scale set. So let me run back over here and connect back. That may be faster than the switcher, actually. All right. And so as I showed this morning with the container service is actually built on scale sets. So the scale sets spin out, and they grow and shrink based on the usage of those VMs. And the container service actually deploys on top. So I showed you this morning Marathon with Mesos. And so you can deploy that on top of the scale sets. We also have support for Docker Swarm. And so you can deploy Docker Swarm, and it will launch and configure right on top of that scale set. So making it very, very easy to be able to configure and control that. It also, again, has that same capability to automatically scale out. And it's a perfect example of using virtual machine scale sets as this cattle concept. Because you don't care, right? You really don't care each individual one, right? All you care about is that you've got enough capacity to be able to handle the workload that you're running. And so this auto scale out, this ability to respond to usage, and then deploying on top of it, when that scale out happens, it will automatically deploy those containers, and away you go. And so the folks using the container service today just recently went GA to generally available. So we don't have as many, but we do have a good set. Force 12.10, the CloudBees guys over at Jenkins. Avanade is using it, and of course, Lumigate as well. And so we're seeing a lot of interest on this pick up as customers start really getting into deploying containers. Okay. So that's kind of the scale point. So let me focus a little bit on availability, because this really is an important area to get right when you're building apps using virtual machines. So from an availability perspective, the first one that I mentioned, being able to have availability across distinct racks and across power units. And so what you can do here is with availability sets, it's a concept in Azure, you can spin up multiple VMs, 2, 3, 4, and it will automatically identify in the system the racks that they're deployed on. So the first one will be deployed, and it will launch. The second one will be deployed, and it effectively will require that those end up deploying on different racks and making sure that you're resilient to a single machine going down, a single rack going down, power, network. All of that resiliency is in place in an automated way. Right? You don't need to worry about it. It just happens when you put it into an availability set. So you want them to be the same instance, so like SQL Server deployed, if you want highly available MySQL on Linux, this type of approach works really well. And then, of course, you can do across those servers, network switches, power units, you can then, of course, make networking work as well. And so one of the capabilities that we have is called the load balancer. And what this does is it takes those deployments across multiple racks and will distribute traffic accordingly. And we have a few options with this. You can do TCP or UDP-based load balancing. So if your app is TDP or, TCP or UDP, it works. The mechanism to deploy is we have two options, a 5-tuple and a 3-tuple. And so for those networking aficionados or experts in the room, 5-tuple is source IP, source port, destination IP, destination port, and then protocol. So those are the 5-tuples. And the key thing is that for most connections from, let's say, a browser, the outbound port is the thing that changes, right? So destination port IP typically don't change. And of course, the source IP typically doesn't change if you're just connecting from one browser. But the source IP does change. Browsers change their export port. And that typically gives you this, this load balancing experience. And then 3-tuple takes away the port. So it's destination IP, source IP, and protocol, which gives you a closer sense of a stickiness for that connectivity. The same IP will end up going to the same backend instance over and over again. You can deploy this internal and external, which is fantastic. So if you're load balancing, if you're doing a line of business app inside a secure network, you can set up a load balancer for that. You can also set it up as an external IP address as well. And this does work for both VMs and for scale sets. Now, if you want a little bit more complexity or a little bit more control over your load balancing, we also offer an application gateway. This is HTTP-based or layer 7-based load balancing. And here, it's much more sticky. So you can do cookie-based affinity. So a website may have a cookie there that then makes sure that you always go to the same backend instance. And this is for solutions that maybe have a little bit of a thicker backend, a little bit more going on in the backend. Sorry, I just got an alert. My instance just scaled up, so that worked. We'll go back to that here. It's calling me.
See, now I have to distract everyone with this. Okay, can you hear? Let's see.
PagerDuty, you have one triggered incident on Microsoft Azure Alert Service. The failure is iCori. Press 4 to acknowledge.
All right, so this just called me and let me know that my instance just scaled up. So obviously you don't have to turn that on. You can make it not call, or call your friend or maybe your parents or something. But in this case, it's calling me. So that's pretty cool, and that is sort of an automated response. It just took a little bit longer, I guess, to get the CPU up and running on that machine. Okay, sorry for the distraction. Sometimes cloud things happen very quickly. Okay, so if you're looking for that layer 7 work, if you're looking for SSL offload, and so you may want to take the SSL into the application gateway, but then distribute traffic based on again layer 7 or HTTP based requests, that can happen below it. You can also do URL based routing. So let's say you want, if they put images in the title of the HTTP request, it'll go to one location. If they put videos, it'll go to another set of locations. And so you have all this control and configuration with the application gateway, adding again higher availability and higher controls as part of that. And then go one level up. So I said you've got the load balancer, that's IP-based, that's focused on really just an IP-based filtering at the bottom. Then you go up, you've got application gateway, and that is more HTTP-based. Now you go one level higher, and this is traffic manager, and this is DNS-based. And this is more geared towards global availability of your instances. So you can improve app response by getting closer to customers. You can also do A/B testing with this mechanism, but most importantly, it gives you availability across multiple sites for your application. And sometimes it's hard. Applications are hard to work this way, but this does enable that failover support between multiple sites. So with that, let me actually show you what this looks like. Okay. So here I've got a deployment already. It's called Build HA East 1. And so what I've got here, I've got a set of virtual machines, East 2 and East 3 running. And so this is running in an availability set. So here, if I actually show you what this looks like, I've got two instances running in availability set, and so they're across two racks here. So that's great. So that means if one rack fails, the other one will stay up. And I've got a load balancer on. I've got an internal one and an external one. And so this load balancer is sending traffic to it. So let me actually go to the IP address of this load balancer. So East LB. And so let me click on this. So there's the DNS name. So I'll copy that and go to this site. Oops, click to copy, not where I wanted to do. Go to this site. Okay, so there's East 1. So this is one of my instances. This is always kind of the tricky thing here to go to the other one. You have to kind of move it a few times. See if you see. Oh, there, East 2. You saw it? Who saw East 2? Okay. Let me see if you didn't see it. Let me try. Oh, there it is. Woo. So this is, you all saw it. I know. So East 1, East 2. So now you can see the fact that this is load balancing at an IP level. So hitting it a few times, like I said, because the browser is picking an export port that's different. Sometimes, it seems somewhat random actually, it will then go to one of the different sites underneath. So that's East 1 and East 2. Now, so that's local, that local availability, and like I said, it's, let's say you're running two SQL servers or two Oracle DBs or two MySQLs, they will replicate and you can basically take care of that underneath. I also happen to have a traffic manager up. So let me actually go here. And so I have a traffic manager up, and so this is doing DNS-based routing. So it already is pointing to that same East US load balancer. So I basically have a layering here. I have traffic manager talking to a load balancer in East US, which then is talking to two virtual machines. And so in this case, I'm going to actually make a change to the load balancer, to the traffic manager, excuse me. And so it's got waiting. So I can say, you know, look, mostly go to this one, but instead, 1,000, one out of every 1,000 go to this one. And let me actually swap these two, okay? And so now I'm going to go to, with this, I'm going to go to the west one instead of the east one, okay? Perfect. Okay, And so now this is still the location of the load balancer, so that's not changing. But if I go to the traffic manager, the DNS one, sometimes I need to reopen it here because DNS ends up caching. Let me open it again. Oh, there we go. Now this goes to the other location. You can see the theme in my talks. This is actually me when I turned 4. So I was very happy, apparently, with that crown. It's a very nice crown, I know. All right, and so you can see that the ability to go to swap between the locations, and so, but if I go back, and so this is the DNS-based routing, but if I go back to this one, this is the load balancer, nothing changed over here. It's still load balancing, still going between 1 and 2. So again, that is that hierarchy that's possible. This traffic manager west-east, load balancer, 2 instances all in east, and it allows me to do that type of global failover and recovery. Okay, let me go back to the slides. It just scaled up again. Now I got 3. My phone's going to be ringing the whole time now. I apologize. So that instance continues to scale. All right. So the last area to really focus on agility. And with agility, the first thing I want to talk about is the resource manager. This is really cool tech in Azure. Really cool. What you can do with the resource manager is you can deploy multiple resources, VMs, SQL database, etc., using a single template. So a single file, a JSON file, put all these pieces together, and you can deploy. And it'll configure them and cross over them. So if you've got a VM that you want to deploy before you deploy another VM, or you've got a web app and you want to wait till the SQL DB spins up, Resource Manager allows all of that coordination and allows you to basically check that coordination into your code base so that you can repeat it over and over again. And so it really, really powerful, allows you to take that technology of these massive apps and put them into a single text file, this JSON file that we support. It's also the basis of our security model. So role-based access control happens completely through this API. It allows you to tag resources. So you can go in and say, I want to tag this resource as this is a dev test resource, so that when the bill comes in, you can say, here are my VMs that were dev test, here are my VMs that are production, and you can start tracking all those different usage patterns in your bill, all of that possible through the resource manager. And of course, templates and policies as well. You can configure your policies to say, only deploy in East US, or only deploy in West Europe, nowhere else, right? Or don't let people deploy app service, I don't know what that is. So you can put all these types of policies and controls in place to enable you to lock down your system without having to bend or break on agility. So you still have agility, but you put these policies in place so that you can control the system even with that level of agility. And so this is also the basis of our Azure Stack story. And so as I mentioned this morning, this ability to take the same API, the same template experience, those same automation capabilities, and deploy them into a public cloud, but then also deploy them into your private or hosted clouds with Azure Stack, very, very powerful and very unique. There's no one else that can do this today. And so very exciting, and with that, maybe I'll show you what the Azure Resource Manager looks like. Okay. And so I've got here, let's see. We don't want no more pictures of me, I promise. Okay. So I've got here, I'm in the landing page for Portal, and I just want to show you sort of how we get here. So resources and templates. Uh-oh. It normally works, I promise. Hey, look at that. How? Wow, that was interesting. Okay, so quick start templates. I love these things. So these offer a very fast and easy way to get going. So here you can see here, I got so many examples. Bosch setup, Redis caching. In fact, majority of these, I think about 60% of these, are open source. So we have a huge amount of open source Linux-based templates. Actually, excuse me, all of the templates are open. They're all in GitHub, but they're deploying open source solutions. 60% are based on Linux. And so you can do Redis cache. If you want to search here, let's say you want to search for, I actually want Elasticsearch. Let me search for Elastic. Ah, look, I can install Elastic Cluster here. And this will install multiple VMs, configure Elasticsearch, all in your account, ready to roll. And what's cool about this, as I mentioned, these are all in here on the portal page, but they're all pulled from GitHub. Actually, GitHub is the backing source for this information. So if I click Learn More on GitHub, it takes me straight to this template. And so I can go in and look, and Well, my goodness, there is the template story. Just scaled again. Here's the template story. And so if I zoom in here a little bit, you can see all of the parameters that I want to play with, all the different sizes I can choose from. So this is the full JSON story, all available here in GitHub. So I can go here, I can learn. I can spend a lot of time learning about this, the platform, and learning about the best way to go build on this. Very cool stuff. And so this offers a huge amount, the Azure Quick Start Templates offers a huge amount of capability here. And so you can see if I actually go back to Quick Start Templates, you can see the full, look at how many there are here. Over 200 templates available for you to go build on and play with. You can see there's CoreOS with Fleet, multi-VM, there's DataStax, you can deploy that, Deis, Doku, Drone, I mean, just the list goes on and on. And so you want to go learn about templates? Here's your source. Now, that's not it, though. That's not all there is. There's more. I know. So when we're deploying and you're deploying VMs and you're deploying them into your account and so on, we're actually remembering the template that you're building. So this template experience is not just a one and done. It doesn't just fire and forget. You can actually go see. So I showed you that build HA East. That was multiple VMs with the load balancer. It seemed pretty complex. This magic button right here, export template. Now I can go in and see. I built that with a bunch of VMs. And I built it over a week or two. I added a VM, then I decided to put a load balancer and so on. The template is all here for me. So now I can take this template. Let me actually zoom out so you can see sort of this whole experience here. Now I can take this template, and you can see this experience here looks very similar to Visual Studio, connected here. I can take this template, I can go learn what it was, I can see what the parameters are, I can even edit it directly here and redeploy it straight from here. I can save it onto my desktop, or I can pull up and see, you know what, I want to run this with PowerShell. It auto-creates a full PowerShell commandlet to go run that template for me a second, a third, a fourth time. And so now I don't even need to go to GitHub. I can go build my own stuff and then learn about templates after building my own stuff. So I build this, I add VMs, I add load balancers, and then I've got the template ready for me to deploy afterwards. So cool. And I can even go over here, .NET, and it gives me the programming experience for if I want to go deploy this in a programmatic way. We will be adding Java to this as well. So just the ability to take this and learn from it and build out your app is really, really fantastic. All right, let me go back here. And so that gives a huge amount of agility for you to deploy and redeploy and redeploy and learn as you go. It's also where the basis of all of our marketplace partners have come from. So our marketplace partners all deploy these templates, and in fact, most of them have put those same templates into the GitHub experience. So you can go and you're like, gosh, I wonder how Cloudera deployed this many VMs with installing Hadoop on it. We have the Cloudera template in GitHub that they wrote and they update and maintain. And so you can learn from that. So the last thing I wanted to talk about in this session was dev test environments. And this is a huge part of the agility that we offer. So getting dev test environments can sometimes be frustrating. This isn't me. It looks like me. No, it's not me. I did keep with the baby theme, though. Dev test environments, getting these can make you sad. It's a long wait time. It's sometimes challenging to get the environments. Setting things up can be hard. Oftentimes, it's hard to do cost control. And of course, keeping that fidelity with your production environment can be extremely challenging. So let me introduce you, if you haven't experienced it, to the Azure Dev Test Labs. Last one, I promise. Worry-free in Dev Test Lab. You can spin these things up. You have complete control over the configuration and the options to deploy. Once you create, you can use in many environments. And most importantly, you can lock down the system to make sure that you have the control that you need with the environments that your developers are deploying on without taking away their agility. It's really important. Giving that agility is so valuable, but sometimes you need to make sure that you have control of the system. Make sure that things aren't getting unruly. And that is really where Dev Test Labs comes in. And so let me show you what that looks like. Okay. This one's in IE. Okay. So here I've got a Dev Test Lab open. Okay. And so I've got a single VM up and running. So I can go in and I can create VMs here. So I can go plus and create a VM here. And this is my Dev Test Lab. This is what I would be seeing as a developer in the company. And so I can go in and maybe I've got a set
Let me zoom in here a little bit. Maybe I've got a set of different templates that are available to me. So this template, this with a health clinic app, maybe someone created this for me to go build, do some development against it. And I can select that option. It's running Linux. And let me pick the lab VM name. And so let's see, Corey Test. Okay, and so I'll pick the image. And here the image is from a set of predefined ones. So I don't have the full list of images here. This has been defined for me as a set of specific images that I can choose from. So let me do test base here. Actually, let me go down here. Let's do, test base, that's fine. Okay, and then from the sizes, again, we have this great versatility with sizes, but maybe my team has decided, look, I don't trust Corey with that big VM size, he's gonna spend all our money. So maybe we restrict it down. Maybe we say only a subset of sizes are supported here. And so here you can say, look, I wanna deploy, let's say the A5 or the A4, great, I can select, this'll go in, but yet still can deploy into my subnet, into my network, into my controlled environment. And so if I spin all this up, I would have a VM ready to roll. I'm not gonna do that right now. But let's say I'm actually the admin. So that's the developer experience. Again, the same agility, I get a VM very, very quickly. I can do my development testing and so on. But let's say I'm the admin and I actually wanna control this. So let me go in here and click on DevBox. And so if I was spinning up this VM and said, look, I wanna make a template out of this. I wanna go recreate this for multiple people. I can go and create a custom image from this and it'll capture what I've done and enable so anyone can deploy it. So again, sharing that agility across your company. You can also do formula. So instead of saying capture the image and redeploy the image, maybe you wanna get the latest bits every time. So maybe you wanna pull down the latest version of Chef each time. So this formula won't capture and freeze the image. It'll capture the way in which I built the image and rebuild it for me the next time. Very, very powerful for DevOps type experiences. Now let me go back here and go back into the dev test lab. Okay, and so now let's assume that I'm actually the administrator and I need to control the system. You can see here VM policies, look at all these. Allowed VM sizes, so now I can go in and say, look, for these dev test labs, for these specific users, I'm actually not gonna enable all the sizes. So you can see I can go in and click which sizes I wanna enable, right? So I can go down and say, oh, G5's here, maybe I don't want G5 there, and you know, go DS1, maybe I want, and hit save, and now this lab will lock down those sizes based on this control that I want. And let's say I want to do auto shutdown or auto start. So this will allow me to have that agility during the week without having to pay for it on the weekend. So you can force all the VMs to shut down on the weekend. Friday night, shut it down, save the money, right? And I know it sounds crazy for me to say that, but no, seriously, you should shut these down, don't use them. Huge amount of benefits you can get by keeping track of those weekend hours. If you're not gonna use them, shut them down. In fact, we have a little trick in Microsoft where we shut down a lot of the developer boxes on Friday. We don't auto restart them. It turns out you save a lot of money because people forgot they were running them. And so it's a huge benefit without, again, taking away any of that versatility or any of that agility. You have that complete control to lock it down and yet monitor and manage your costs. So a great experience there, auto start as well, the amount of VMs per user. You can even take a look at your cost thresholds and see how much money you're actually using in this account and make sure that it's exactly what you're expecting. Let's see. Magic? Look at that. Whoa. I'm spending a lot. So it basically tells you, it's a great demo. So it tells you how much you're spending and sort of the rate of spend. It also gives you your projected cost. So now you can go in and say, wow, I'm on my way to spending, you know, $300 US. That's a lot. Maybe I should control this a little bit better. So that offers a lot of these options. All of this is Dev Test Lab, and the key thing, this is all free on top of virtual machines. You're still only paying for virtual machines here. There's no additional cost to get any of this capability with Dev Test Labs. Super cool. All right. All right. So today, I've talked about hyperscale, the ability to have virtual machines and scale sets. Virtual machines, more of the pets, the one by one. Scale sets, the massive scale out, very, very fast. For deploying and auto scale, I just scaled again.
it's going like crazy now. Container service, which I showed this morning, the ability to have very fast up and down containers and be able to use those for very quick based applications and response to need based on your application, how it's working. PaaS on IaaS as well, being able to show, I walked through this morning, things like Cloud Foundry or Cloud Services, being able to deploy those types of solutions right on VMs. Availability sets for local-based availability with load balancing on the network, and then Global Traffic Manager for regional-based availability. And then finally, the agility with the Resource Manager, capturing templates, being able to redeploy those templates, having a marketplace built on those templates to get started very quickly, and of course, Dev Test Lab to be able to get that agility without sacrificing on the control that you need. And so across these three, we believe we're helping you bring your application, bringing your architecture into this next generation of cloud. And we hope that across all of these, you're able to make your applications better and easier, faster and simpler. Oh, sorry about that. And with that, I think I have a few minutes for questions. And I think I give money for questions. So if people have questions, then I give you money. Yeah, everyone's got questions now, right? I also have these. So I will hand out these before we leave. So why don't I take, let's say I'll take three questions, and then I'll stick around a little bit for more questions, but I want to make sure people can get these stickers if they want them. So let's start with three questions. Yeah. And I can repeat it, so you can stay there. Virtual machine. Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, the question is effectively, when would you use virtual machines versus the other parts of the platform? You know, and I think, and actually, I'll just answer this, and then I'll let folks go. You know, I think from my perspective, I'll still give you your money. My perspective, you know, the beauty of Azure is the wide variety of different options that we have. And you know, I walked through App Service, and I'm actually going to be demoing App Service later today. The really great thing about App Service, if you're building a website, right, no matter big or small, right, it can be very, very massive. Jet.com runs their front end on top of websites and mobile apps as well. So massive websites are great, but App Service really is focused on a website model, right? And so you know, if you're deploying other solutions, other technologies, so we see a lot of VM usage for lift and shift-esque deployments. So what that means is you've got a lot of specialization, let's say in IIS, right? You wanna go in and you wanna really configure it in a very unique way that maybe websites doesn't offer, right? And so that's a good reason why you'd go and deploy in that way, maybe using scale sets as that option. Maybe you're doing something with Linux, you wanna do some very specific things with Nginx, and you can't do that, let's say, on our load balancer with websites. And so maybe you want to go get in and spend time on that. SQL deployments, maybe you prefer running the machine versus using SQL DB. So there ends up being quite a few reasons for it. I think if all things being equal, I would always push you up in the stack and say, you know, use different solutions higher in the stack, use different solutions above virtual machines. But I think there are a lot of reasons why, from a developer perspective, you still want that control, that level of configuration that that virtual machines offer. So, great question. So what I'll do, guys, I am going to stick around so that I don't have to keep everybody. I'll stick around. If you guys want these stickers, you can come up and get one here. If you're interested, they can go on your laptops or what have you. So I'll put these here. With that, hopefully you guys have a great day. Thank you so much.